You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 15th of July, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from russjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing? It's a beautiful summer's day over here in Blighty. What's it like where you are?
Well, the good news is that since the last time we spoke, I have yet to hit an animal. Or a deer, or a tree, or another car. My confidence is absolutely through the roof. Beyond that, though, I can't believe I've just discovered that a convicted murderer was just elected to a D.C. public office, the Advisory Neighborhood Commission. And in fact, all three candidates were in prison that were running for that office. I can't believe I just found that out. But that is relevant to what we're talking about today. It's really hard to be funny. When you're dealing with these kind of things, and I don't know, maybe the deer got off easy. Who knows?
Well, I take it you're referring to the sort of corruption that we see in South Africa and Nelson Mandela being elected, who was a terrorist, and no doubt most of the ANC politicians are all criminals. They certainly look that way after doing the research that I've been doing this afternoon, looking at what's going on in South Africa. Because this is the big news story at the moment. It's been covered up by the mainstream media all this week, and they've really just started talking about it today. There is massive looting and rioting that is going on over there. I guess we should really summarize what's happening and then look at the reasons for it. The South African government finally deployed the national military this morning after days of massive rioting. The rioters are supposed to be protesting the jailing of former President Jacob Zuma, who has had legal problems for many years. He previously avoided prison on a rape charge, even though he admitted to raping the woman. A panel of three judges refused to convict him, as a mob of Zuma supporters publicly threatened to murder the judge outside the courthouse. In 2020, a court ruled that he could be criminally tried for illegal arms dealing. When a warrant was issued for his arrest, he barricaded himself in with armed supporters. He eventually surrendered and on June 29th was sentenced to 15 months for contempt of court. Since then, South Africa has seen some of the worst riots in the nation's history. 70 people have been killed and entire shopping centres have been looted and then burned to the ground. Even a water purification centre failed to escape the wrath of the Zuma supporters, who managed to destroy it. Milk tankers have been forced to empty thousands of litres of milk on the ground as the depots meant to accept it are all burned down, damaged or unmanned. Electric plants and factories are burning. Even the newspapers have been forced to shut down and a famine is now imminent. I mean, this is really like cutting your nose off to spite your face, isn't it? I mean, destroying water purification centres, making it so that milk tankers can't deliver the milk. They've got no fuel there either. It's like they just destroy everything around them. They destroy their neighbourhoods in protest. And what is it they are protesting at? Well, Jacob Zuma has pretty much destroyed the country through his corruption, through the kickbacks that he's given to all his friends. And now that the courts are saying, well, really, we should do something about this, we should investigate this, all of his supporters are saying, well, if you do that, we're just going to burn the place down anyway. I mean, South Africa is looking like it's going in the same way as Rhodesia, which ended up being Zimbabwe with masses of inflation, used to be the breadbasket of Africa, and now it relies upon food aid. And everybody was hoping that South Africa was not going to go in the same way, but it really looks like it is. And this could be the final straw that broke the camel's back. What do you make of the situation over there, Matt?
Well, it's really hard to summarize it in anything less than 4 hours. But when I was in college, this was a big issue for me. And I got into a lot of trouble for predicting just this when de Klerk was dismantling the system. But I had no idea. I don't think anyone there had any idea it would be this bad. It's now a fourth world economy. And these affirmative action programs are putting completely unqualified people, non-whites, into positions of technical skill. Zuma, you know, the law works there through violence. Now, I used to be somewhat sympathetic to the Zulu, but that's no longer the case here. He got away with what he's got away with only because his supporters threatened to kill everyone around him. I mean, the man used to speak about the voodoo rituals he would do to get rid of the Boers in his life, bragging about killing white people. White kids. I mean, this is kind of well known, but that's the tip of the iceberg for this man. And of course, the exact same thing is happening here. But now the famine issue, driving white farmers out, having minimal food production, despite the fact that you say being the breadbasket of all Africa. This was a prosperous little place in the 1970s under Verwoerd and that group, and black income, black education, black health went through the roof. You had massive black immigration from the rest of Africa coming into the apartheid system. And the regime, the U.S., along with the communists, did everything they could to destroy. Black businesses were destroyed by these sanctions, so I remember very well. And if you dare bring this up in a university in the early 90s, it's a miracle I made it. So this is just more the same. It's not a viable country anymore.
It used to have the cheapest fuel anywhere in the world, and now it's got no fuel, and the power stations are all broken down. They have power cuts. The hospitals don't have the medicine that they need. This is what happens when you put people with an average IQ of 75 in charge of a state, basically. This was a first world state, and by doing that, by putting it into the hands of people that never developed their own civilization because they didn't have the capacity to do that, if you put them in charge of a civilization, they're just going to destroy it. And that is what we've seen happening here. Well, let's have a look at the details here. Once again, another explosive situation in South Africa has reared its head. Violence and the threat of violence is being used as a modus operandi in a controversy surrounding the legal no man's land, which former President Jacob Zuma has created for himself, utilizing the country's Western legal system when it suits him and lambasting it when it doesn't. Zuma was charged with 16 counts of money laundering, racketeering and fraud nearly 18 years ago, and he has used the country's Western-based legal system to avoid a trial. Last week, the country's constitutional court sentenced him to 15 months imprisonment for contempt of the Zondo Commission's hearings on state capture, an event which occurred under Zuma's 9-year calamitous presidency. In a very South African law and order playbook, threats of violence about Zuma's position moved centre stage. Thousands of Zulu supporters declared they would defend the ex-president against any action by the police to take him to jail. Wielding sticks, spears, knobkerries and machine guns, they declared their determination to prevent Zuma from incarceration. Police Minister Bheki Kele was ambiguous about arresting Zuma, declaring that he wanted to avoid a bloodbath. Threats of a bloodbath were used to great effect by the previous government and their proxy media to frighten South Africa's white population into capitulating to the ANC regime. Now that bloodbaths are fairly regular occurrences in the new South Africa, some irony can be enjoyed by those who knew that the bloodbaths would certainly not be disappearing once the ANC came to power. But Zuma was eventually taken to prison in the early hours of Thursday, the 8th of July. It was clear that he was being hung out to dry by the ANC. He was isolated. More than 400 police and officials were brought to KwaZulu-Natal from around South Africa to ensure that the post-midnight voyage by Zuma to the escort prison went without a hitch. But violence was in the air from all sides, and it is not certain what will happen regarding the ex-president's attempts to try and avoid a stint or otherwise in prison. Now, I'm guessing that the Zulus support him because he's from that tribe. I mean, there are all these different tribes over there. We look at it and we tend to say, well, they're all black. But in actual fact, there are dozens of different tribes with tribal rivalries and all sorts. How much support does Zuma have actually outside the Zulu nation? Do you know, Matt?
Well, I'm sorry. I've been trying to figure out what a knob carry is as you've been speaking, but that'll wait until later.
I think it's an Irish word. I think it's an Irish word. I think it's like one of those Irish walking stick things that you can use, also double up as a weapon.
Alrighty. Anyway, you know, the support has nothing to do with any progress, any economic performance. Support is tribally based. And given the culture there, it doesn't matter if he's done these things wrong. Of course he has. His supporters say it all the time. The current president says it. But that's what's considered masculine. This is what a man does. He does exactly what he wants. He takes what he wants, whether it be through voodoo ritual or violence or necklacing or anything else. You know, the rape case is a serious one. The judge pretty much said he was guilty. She was HIV positive. She died recently. She was threatened every single day by his supporters. And he said, well, she was HIV positive, but after I did her, I took a shower, so I'm not going to get it. I mean, that's the level of his knowledge. And but it doesn't matter anyway, because even if this guy went to prison, they said they're going to break him out, and no one's going to stop him. As of right now, it looks like certain units of the army are there. How many of them are going to stay loyal? This is, you know, this isn't going away. So the chances of him actually spending any time in prison are pretty minimal. But you know, the notion of corruption is so ingrained, there's no non-corrupt part of the society to stop corruption. So this is simply part of the political culture there.
Rape is just a part of the culture there, isn't it, really? I mean, they seem to view any of the females that are actually there in South Africa as if they belong to the South African males, and they have no right to say no, basically. I think there's something like 20% of them were polled and said that they enjoy gang rape, and these were just teenagers. I mean, it's really shocking statistics. You can look them up on Wikipedia. Well, let's have a look at what actually led up to this. Last year, only two sectors of the South African economy contributed exceptionally to the country's overall sustainability: mining and agriculture, both mainly in the hands of the country's first world sector, and that means white people. In any logical society, the country's head would laud these efforts and provide assistance to productivity and financial sustainability, but not so in South Africa. Despite the calamity that occurred in Zimbabwe when white farmers were chased off their land and the country ended up as a grab bag of poverty and corrupt politicians, President Cyril Ramaphosa is negotiating with the Socialist Economic Freedom Fighters political party, which makes a point of targeting South Africa's white farmers, about how to agree on a policy of land expropriation without compensation. Section 25 of the South Africa Constitution must be amended to accomplish this goal, and Ramaphosa purportedly needs the EFF to attain the majority needed in Parliament to change this clause. Why would any sane president want to destroy one of his country's top productive sectors, which has the unique ability to provide food for his country's 60 million people? Would France's President Macron want to destroy his country's agricultural sector's contribution to food production? If he did, he would be thrown out of power and be possibly committed to an asylum as hastily as possible. Already, more than 4,000 working farms have been lost to production because of the ANC's suicidal land reform program. But that fact appears to be ignored by the government. They never mention it. While the president appears pragmatic, he is not, and he is arguably no different from the heads of state up north. He has become as rich as Croesus since the ANC took power. He made his fortune via his banks, his party's black economic empowerment legislation, and is clearly only interested in holding on to power. According to Forbes, his net worth is currently $464 million. The president's behaviour vis-à-vis the EFF is not encouraging. Why is he trying to change the South African constitution to take land away without paying for it? He says he values food security for the country, but he cannot be serious if he takes away the only true means of securing that food security. I think he can't see any further than just trying to hold on to power, and he thinks that if he takes all the land from the farmers and gives it all to the blacks, they'll keep voting for him. He doesn't understand that eventually the money won't be worth anything anymore. It will be like in Zimbabwe with masses of inflation if he does this. He can't actually see any further than just staying in power, I think. What are your thoughts on it, Matt?
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think he understands what inflation is or how that even works. Just like the Soviets destroying their peasantry, it seems irrational until you realize that they knew full well that the West was going to bail them out. Food aid was going to come pouring in. Well, the same thing here. They really don't have to worry about that. It's far more important to destroy any white economic presence and then lie about it, knowing full well that the media is going to all sides. Conservatives are doing the same thing and blame it on something else. But on the rape issue, I did want to, you know, when this first apartheid first collapsed, this went through the roof. You have something like 9% of rapes even being reported and a minuscule percent being leading to convictions. But as of a few years ago, you had, you know, 21.3 per 100,000 rape rate in the U.S. In South Africa, it was almost 100. I mean, no one's even close to them. And what struck me about it, just like in Sweden, the feminists will attack you for even bringing this up. So their concern with rape only concerns white males. I mean, they're advocating for increased rapes both in South Africa and in Northern Europe through the refugee crisis. And you can't even bring it up. In fact, the left has destroyed newspapers that even mentioned the race of the perpetrator in the rare cases that happened. That struck me back in the 90s. So you figure a minuscule percentage are even mentioned. What's the rate? And unlike the U.S., these women are immediately attacked and abandoned by their families. And so even bringing it up from their point of view is almost a suicide pact. So when all this feeds together with basic corruption and the collapse of any remote civic virtue there, it is fourth world, fifth world, not viable. And thank God for the Russians, who allowed the Boers to immigrate to Crimea, because no other country would permit these refugees, white farmer refugees, into their countries.
Well, some people might say, well, this is Africa. This is different to what it's like in the West. But we are becoming more faster and faster. We are becoming a minority, and we will end up in the same situation that South Africa is in. We can see parallels happening already in America. They were giving out grants to black farmers and no grants to the white farmers, and that had to be stopped in the courts. But that's where it starts before they then move on to taking the land away from the white farmers and giving it to the blacks. And what we also have here in our countries is diversity quotas, and the diversity quotas are at another level in South Africa. But we will end up in the same situation that they are in, because all of this that's going on in South Africa now, it all started with the same things that we have here going on in the West. And we can see this with this this next particular quote, which is about these diversity quotas. In the economic arena, South Africa's primary reasons for a rapidly deteriorating economy are succinctly described by Mercer as apartheid in reverse. In an effort to correct the racial disparities of the past, the ANC established the Black Economic Empowerment Program, followed by the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Program. This is a system whereby all enterprises, public and private, were required to make their workforces demographically representative of the country's racial profile. And that's exactly the same as we have here in Britain, on the television, in the police force, in the fire brigade. I'm sure you've got the same thing over there. In America, the difference is in South Africa, it's about 9 blacks to 10 whites. And at the moment, it's the other way around in Britain. But it's rapidly changing. And even when you end up with a massive majority of blacks, they're still going to claim that they are the minority and they need to be represented in the workforce. In 2013, ANC parliamentarian Mario Rantho described his party's vision for government. It is imperative to get rid of merit as the overriding principle in the appointment of public servants, he declared. And again, we are hearing similar things now being said in Britain. The results were predictable. Black households saw their incomes shrink by 19% during the first 6 years of ANC rule, and the total number of persons of all races living in absolute poverty had doubled following the ANC's ascension to power. Farmland confiscated from whites as part of a land-sharing agreement remains virtually barren. Life expectancy has declined from 64 at the end of apartheid to just 56 in 2015. And as The Economist puts it, public healthcare, the roadways, ports and road infrastructure bear testimony to the insidious effects of racial preference on South Africa. Since then, economic growth has been anemic. The national debt has grown by 44%. The nation's rand-based currency had lost 20% of its value by 2013, with the 2015 unemployment rate standing at 25%, and today it is at 33%. Moreover, the city of Durban has fallen off the list of the world's 50 largest container ports. And with those racial preferences, coupled with de facto one-party rule, came the inevitable corruption. Plum government jobs were given to ANC insiders, irrespective of qualifications, and then President Zuma spent $24 million of public money to add a pool and amphitheatre to his private home. Nonetheless, he was re-elected to another five-year term in 2014. Think tank theorist Leon Leo, who helped defeat apartheid, characterises the crime and corruption in South Africa as a simple manifestation of the breakdown of the state. The government is just appallingly bad at everything it does. Education, healthcare, infrastructure, security, everything that is a government function is in a shambles, he adds. Well, I would add to that, it's entirely predictable if you put people with an IQ of 75 in charge of it all. I mean, what do you make of this, Matt, and the diversity quotas here?
I've always said that when we're debating with leftists or even neocons, South Africa is one of our best arguments. There's no getting around it. There's absolutely no way for them to reframe the debate. There's been a huge media blackout on this stuff. There's been a few Wall Street Journal, a few places have run this story, except they're saying it's, you know, poverty. They haven't delivered on their promises post-apartheid. But they keep referring to it as the new South African democracy, even though it's, you know, 20 years old or more, I should say, almost 30 years old. So this is the definition of democracy there. And I think a lot of people, but usually on our side, knew exactly what was going to happen, no different than Haiti. Haiti's in the exact same position. And this Leon Lowe, who was an opponent of apartheid, then says, oh, this is a manifestation breakdown of the state. Well, guys like him are responsible. Right now, the economy is based on black and Jewish elites simply asset stripping. Well, now there's nothing left to strip. Every institution has collapsed, including the power grid, including the education system. Hospitals aren't functioning. So, yeah, of course, this is what awaits us. But the last thing you can say is that white rule was infinitely better and better for blacks in every possible way. And the thing about the Zulus is that they supported apartheid. They were the white South Africans' best friend for a long time. And to see them doing this is very disappointing. I mean, I shouldn't be too surprised, but for a long time, the Zulus were part of the black backbone of the apartheid system. And maybe I'm exaggerating there, but it's, now this is just destroying whatever value is left in the economy. And I don't see on what grounds they're ever going to be able to rebuild.
You know, the really incredible thing is, I mean, how could anybody expect it to end any differently? I mean, we've got all of history to look into. We can look at these explorers in Africa. We can look at the history of Africa. We can look at the average IQ of African blacks. And you can see that this is the only way that it can end up. And yet still people refuse to believe it and think that everybody is all the same. And we can just hand them a first world country and it will stay a first world country. It won't. It will be destroyed. And if we continue with these diversity quotas in our countries are going to look like South Africa is looking now within 50 years. In a rebuke to the African National Congress movement, government, more than 60% of all South Africans polled in 2015 said the country was better run during white minority rule. One in five black people interviewed gave the regime, which jailed Nelson Mandela and denied them the vote, a positive rating, a result which analysts attributed to crime and unemployment. In 1995, fewer than one in 10 gave apartheid a positive rating. A growing number of white people voiced confidence in the future of the state, as did blacks, who have prospered since democratic elections replaced apartheid in 1994. So that's obviously the people that are getting the kickbacks. Perceptions that the new elite is corrupt have also diminished. The study was conducted by Afrobarometer in September and October 2015 on behalf of the Institute for Democracy in South Africa, Ghana's Center for Democratic Development, and the Michigan State University. Some 2,400 South Africans were interviewed in a representative sample based on the 1996 census. The disparity in views on the new South Africa threw into relief the anger of a large minority of blacks who felt abandoned, said Bob Matties of Afrobarometer, which is based in Cape Town. And I bet that's even more now. And if you think it, at the time of apartheid, it was 1 in 10. In 2015, it was 1 in 5. I should imagine it's probably more than half now saying we preferred it when it was under white minority rule. What do you make of this poll here, Matt?
Well, I'm surprised they even mentioned this at all. This is in a mainstream newspaper, a British newspaper. And, of course, the analysts claiming this is because of crime and violence. You know, the damage control that they tried to do was absolutely ridiculous. Those who are old enough to remember a time before 1994 are well aware that the opportunities were better. You didn't have this kind of crime. South Africa was an extraordinary miracle. Its isolation meant that it created everything from cars to toothbrushes to military equipment. It was a miracle. It was extraordinary. And because of the sanctions and its isolation, it created a huge esprit de corps with its people and a substantial minority of blacks who did very well. But they did very well because they actually had jobs. Now, and they say this very ambiguously here, it's simply kickbacks. It's the largest welfare state in the industrialized world. And the collapse of the rand, is very well known. In the 90s, it inflation went up to 60,000%. You know, you have no competence. You have no ability to run an economy. And, of course, anyone who matters wants to leave or has left. Every institution has collapsed. And that's why it kind of dropped out of news reporting starting in maybe 95, 96. You didn't hear much about South Africa anymore.
Well, we know what the media is like over here and how it's constantly critical and it's trying to break everything down. So I do wonder what the South African media is like. In any normal country, an avalanche of corruption scandals in the press would bring down the government. Or, what would be more likely in Africa, lead to a muzzled press. However, South Africa's newspapers do not have much influence on ANC voters because the papers are read mainly by whites and by educated blacks, many of whom are themselves engaged in corruption or who directly benefit from the anti-white system. The most politically influential media are the state radio and television, created by the former white government that reached tens of millions of blacks in African languages. The South African Broadcasting Corporation is so tightly controlled by the ANC and its cronies that it poses no threat. Either it does not report scandals, or it presents them as partisan controversies not to be taken seriously. So I think we can see here there's this IQ issue. Again, if you've got an average IQ of 75, you're not really going to read newspapers anyway, so it doesn't really matter what's in the newspapers. What do you make of the media over there, Matt?
Well, sometimes we forget about this. If they're going to burn down the country because a criminal is going off to jail, what would they do to a newspaper that said something they didn't like? And because they don't read, they could tell them anything. They could invent a story that a newspaper said, and the place is burned to the ground, and its staff murdered. I guarantee you that's happened in the past there for any – so it's a state-run, party-run media, except for a handful of white groups. And even there, they have to be terrified all the time. Which is what apartheid was. Apartheid was protecting this tiny minority within the miracle that it created. And there's nothing wrong with that. But the media is something we forget about. It is tightly and completely controlled. And it doesn't matter anyway, because these people can tell, the ANC leaders can tell their supporters anything, and they're going to believe it.
I did actually catch a part on the news today. They were saying that one of the newspapers has had to close down. So I don't know whether that's because the offices were firebombed or through threat. But yeah, one of the newspapers is not publishing for whatever reason. Well, what about NATO or the UN or the International Court? What about the human rights, the NGOs, all the rest of them? Are they going to do anything? Any suspicion that the major Western powers would step in to curtail South Africa's runaway corruption was effectively dispelled earlier this year. when a document was leaked to the Johannesburg Sunday Times. It consisted of a letter by American, British, German, Dutch and Swiss diplomats impressing upon M. Ramaphosa that he should do something to curtail corruption if he wanted further investment in the country. Stung by such imperialist interference in the affairs of an independent African country, the ANC jettisoned its nominally pro-business mask in favour of its traditional Afro-Marxist rhetoric in a statement. Quote, "The ANC condemns this dramatic holier-than-thou stance of these former colonisers, and we would not like to relate to them on the history of master-slave relations." Close quote. The five Western powers promptly assured the ANC that it had been misunderstood and that they were not worried about corruption in South Africa. Their embassies issued a joint statement essentially saying they had never taken official notice of corruption in South Africa. Its conclusion was, "We have strongly supported South Africa's drive to attract foreign investment from the start, and we will continue to do so in the future. We are happy with the positive engagement we have had with the South African government and with civil society partners." It's incredible, isn't it? All you have to do is accuse the West of being racist and they'll just run away and give up. What do you make of this, Matt?
Well, I found that by accident. And it sounds like something right out of the Babylon Bee or The Onion. You can't invest in that country. There's no way to do business there unless you have your own private army. The president complains. They immediately say, "Oh, don't worry. We weren't talking about you guys. We were talking about someone else." And the corruption is not a problem. This is reaching levels where it's really just mockery and satire is all we have anymore. And this means that they're going to get loans and aid and investment, knowing full well they'll never see that money again. It's not going to do anything. They're going to lose money. They'll lose entire branches of their industry, but they'll do it so as not to appear discriminatory towards the black regime. These people have done it over and over again. They'll lose billions of dollars to show the world that they're not racist.
It's just a never-ending black hole to pour money into, really. That's all South Africa is now. All we can really hope to do is just pray for the whites that are left there. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.